This is a rebroadcast of Migrant Matters. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
I'm here at the Guelph Youth Music Center with Yaroslava and Viviana. These two women are part of the Women's Coordinating Committee for Free Wa'amapu in Toronto, which is a Mapuche Indigenous organization. Can you tell listeners what is the Women's Coordinating Committee for Free Wa'amapu?
Well, basically, we are a small Indigenous organization in Toronto, basically a group of a few women that decide to inform and diffuse information about what our political prisoners are coming up with in the struggles in southern Chile. And currently, especially within the Indigenous sovereignty movement within southern Chile, the majority of the political prisoners are actually Indigenous. And so we can see now in the last, especially in the last 10 years, that the majority of those people that have been tried under the anti-terrorist law actually were and are Indigenous people that have decided to stand up for a right to their land and to their sovereignty. And so we, who are based in Toronto, actually have decided to take on the role of being able to diffuse this information to the public and be able to inform people about what's been going on with regards to repression and as well the conditions that our political prisoners are in right now. So as an organization, our role is essentially to not only just inform, but also go reach out towards fellow allied groups as well as our brothers and sisters here around what we call Turtle Island that are also fighting in Indigenous sovereignty rights, such as the peoples of Six Nations of the Grand River Territory, such as people as Native Youth Movement of the West Coast, as well, especially within the anti-Olympics movement that we're very heavily involved in, and linking those struggles as well with allied communities within the various communities around the GTA, including various anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist organizations and anti-colonial organizations across what is now Southern Ontario and Quebec.
So you mentioned the anti-terrorist law in Chile on Mapuche territory. Can you talk about Pinochet's anti-terrorist law?
Basically, Pinochet's anti-terrorist law was enacted during the dictatorship in the Constitution in 1981, where it stipulates that any action that would be deemed, well, obviously violence in nature would be by an organization or leftist group at the moment, would be considered like a terrorist act, and that would be specifically geared towards criminalizing any effort of the revolutionary movement at the time to topple over the dictatorship. Now, this law, during the time of the democratic era, beginning in 1990, from there on onwards again, continued to be implemented and continue to stay, as the constitution of Chile has never actually changed since the actual dictatorship was enacted. And so since 1981, the same constitution still reigns in Chile, and therefore the same laws are still in place and have been able to criminalize certain, especially people that have decided to take a stance like, for their rights, and criminalize the movement in that way. Especially in the last 10 years, the implementation of the anti-terrorist law has been taken towards Indigenous peoples, specifically towards the Mapuche fight for Indigenous sovereignty in southern Chile, where the state has systematically used the anti-terrorist law for the burning of certain logging trucks, for the burning of certain estates that belong to mining and logging companies within the territory that have continued to exert genocide on our people. And so we can see that there's been an escalation in terms of state repression within our people, and the use of the anti-terrorist law is extremely useful for the state in that way, because once you're tried under it, it's very difficult to get a fair and free trial because of the fact that you can have faceless witnesses within trials where, like, literally people come in and testify in a court with their veils on their faces, so you don't actually know who's testifying against you. You can't actually see the evidence that the state actually has in court in order for you to make a proper defense of your case, as well as the times in which the cases go on is for very, very long times. So we can say upwards of a year, or if not a year and a half, of preliminary investigation goes into the cases, and the investigation usually takes place after they are charged and are arrested and put in jail. So it's a very arbitrary notion of the law. The law is generally speaking arbitrary and generally targets, obviously, racialized and poor communities in general, but this is just an escalation of how the criminalization of dissent has actually worked in Chile ever since the dictatorship that is, well, as we always know, you know, continued this ongoing persecution of peoples that have decided to fight for their rights. And in this case, our indigenous Mapuche people who have decided to take back the land and be able to exert their own autonomy and sovereignty against these corporations and against state jurisdiction that have kept them under oppression for more than 200 years. So.
Yes, and just in case there are listeners who don't know, where is the Mapuche territory situated on the global map? Where?
Basically, it's at the very southern end of what we now know as Chile, so the southern end of the South American continent. So it's like almost towards, going towards the Antarctic Circle, almost, but a little bit, just all the way south of Santiago. And traditionally, Mapuche territory stretched all throughout Chile from the third region, which is around the region of Tarapacá, and goes all the way down to the ninth region, all the way down to the lakes region, and actually stretched all the way east to Buenos Aires. So there was a huge, immense territory that we're speaking about that was technically and traditionally Mapuche prior to contact. But all of these lands, obviously, after the Spanish invasion came to our lands, essentially, obviously, like, displaced and murdered half the people on our territories and displaced them slowly further and further south. The interesting aspect to take away from our Mapuche indigenous peoples is that they weren't like any other indigenous peoples on the continent in that they fought a vigilant resistance against the Spanish and actually won. In 1641, there was a nation-to-nation treaty with the Spanish crown outlining the land south of the Biobío River in the 8th region of what is now known as Chile as Mapuche sovereign Mapuche territory. So this was very rare in the case of the Spanish because the Spanish tended to just come in and murder the indigenous peoples of whatever population they were in interaction with. So the fact that our people were able to resist in a way that was impossible for the Spanish to not comply is a huge, huge feat for our people in that way. So technically, the territories right now that are being contested are the territories that have been, like, the treaty territories that have been signed from the Biobío River all the way south. So pretty much, if you look at the map now, that would probably be the southern quarter of Chile. So, like, one quarter of Chile would actually be Mapuche territory, sovereign indigenous Mapuche territory.
Wow. And so what do you think made the Mapuche people be able to overcome the Spanish invasion?
One of the reasons why we were able to fend off the Spanish so well was because of the decentralized nature of our organization in terms of our Mapuche people. So if we take a look at all indigenous peoples have a circular social structure in that everything that we do as indigenous peoples relates to our cosmology and relates to the land. And so we live off the rule of the land, so to speak. And so, therefore, everyone is in a circular, we live within a circular bounds in that way. So everyone is dependent of everything else, and no one is above anyone else in that way. We are all dependent of the ecosystem and of our Mother Earth, and therefore, we have to live in harmony with her. That's all indigenous peoples, but some indigenous peoples tend to be more centralized than others. Our people tended to be very decentralized, which meant that the majority of our peoples lived in small knit communities where families would be the ones to basically take hold of their own autonomy within their different territories and areas of territories for that matter. And so when the Spanish came, they were in many aspects fighting a many-headed hydra, because once they would attack one village, for example, the other would just, you know, spring back up and attack them on the other side. Once they would try and enter one area, the other villages would just, you know, attack them through a different side. So if you can imagine trying to control an entire area as large as from Santiago to like Buenos Aires across a continent, it would be extremely difficult for an invading army such as the Spanish, with all their technology and everything. It would still be difficult, as it would be based on asymmetric warfare, essentially. And so our people back then, you know, fought with, like, with our traditional, you know, Mapuche warrior tactics that were essentially guerrilla tactics back then, and fought against the Spanish in that way and actually managed to keep them at bay. And so we have a long history of resistance in that way. And thanks to that is that we are in existence today with our own traditions, with our own cosmology, as well as like trying to keep that alive, even though the Chilean state afterwards managed to impose themselves on our territory. So just to give you some background, the Chilean state was established in 1810. However, during this time, Chile only expanded towards the Biobío River. However, in 1818, one of the forefathers of Chile, Bernardo O'Higgins, if you can believe his last name, O'Higgins, very interesting aspect in that way, he actually stated that in the constitution that was written in 1818, that Mapuche territory should be annexed by the Chilean state and therefore become part of Chilean territory. And that didn't actually come into effect until 1881, where the pacification war, so to speak, was established within Mapuche territory in order to basically annex our people and commit further genocide on our people and encroach our lands. So during this time, our people, it was just too hard an army to fight back against, and therefore were reduced to like what we call now reservations that were in the southern portion of what is now like the 9th and 8th region. However, despite this, despite the huge amount of genocide that was imposed on our people, we still had managed to create that historic memory that kept it going. And therefore, people have managed to fight back even until this day.
Wow. I just wanted to clarify, when you say cosmology, what does that mean?
When I speak about cosmology, I mean our indigenous worldview, in the sense that we as indigenous peoples live off the land, and that land to us is sacred, as well as everything that comes of the land, the birds, the plants, everything that surrounds it, and therefore we have to be able to take care of it in order for us to survive as a people. Our traditions, our medicine, our way of life comes from that land, and therefore if we don't have that land, we cease to exist as people. So essentially they can try and tell, the state can try and tell us that we can be indigenous and be within the state and accept their jurisdiction, or we can be within the state and, like, you know, try and thrive within their societies. But in really what they're doing essentially is just terminating us as people, because we as people don't recognize actually the jurisdiction of the state in the fact that they've stolen our lands, and that to regard this land as property of anyone else, we don't consider the land as property. We consider the land as a being, as something that is to be taken care of, not something to actually, you know, hold. That's a very big difference, for example, with the capitalist ideology that exists, for example, in the world currently, where everything is private property, where things are bought and sold, and there is a value to them in the market, for example, whereas we as indigenous peoples would have to be against any sort of ongoing encroachment to any sort of to our lands, because it would be against our own principles as being indigenous peoples for us to privatize the land, for us to say that something is ours in terms of our own property that no one else can touch and that we can profit out of. That would be completely immoral within our indigenous cosmology. So that's when I say indigenous cosmology, and that we can say that a lot of the indigenous, like the indigenous cosmology itself in general, not just within our traditions, but just in general, tends to be very anti-capitalist in that way.
The repression on the Mapuche people continues today, and I was wondering, how does that look like today? How are they being criminalized today?
Well, there are several forms in which the criminalization takes place. There is the military apparatus, the police apparatus that physically goes into the communities and tries to repress any sort of movement that would be against their interests obviously. So, for example, our people have had to deal with the ongoing encroachment of their lands, not just by the state itself, but also by logging corporations that have gone into our territories and that have poisoned the waters and whatnot and polluted the lands, essentially. We have a particular case in Chile where the majority, like 70% of the land is actually privatized. And 80% of the waters are also privatized as well. This was all done actually during the Pinochet dictatorship, where the neoliberal mind thought was put into practice by Pinochet and was obviously headed from folks at, you know, the Chicago Economic School, obviously. And that's really had an impact on our people because the privatization of the land that was previously theirs has now pretty much like almost all been confiscated and been destroyed, in the sense that, like, if you take the logging companies that have control of like 80% of the land in southern Chile, which are huge estates, what they've done essentially, they have clear-cutted all the natural forest of trees that actually, you know, are millennia old, literally millennia old. They're about 2,000 years old in our territories where we live. They're ancient sacred trees. They've cut them down and they've been able to put up these fake forests where they harvest pine, like a pine, like an exotic pine that isn't of the area, and harvest them, grow them, and then log them for export. So we have entire forests that are basically being manufactured and being sold off to the highest bidder in the world market, which has been horrifying for our communities because the land is being depleted in that way, because the pines that have been imposed on the land have been actually very detrimental to the land itself, as well as the underground water streams, and have polluted the area. And so if our people don't actually fight back against these logging corporations that have, which in our case would be more forestry corporations, if we like to look at it in that way, then our people disappear because our people live off the land traditionally. And if we don't rescue what is our essence in terms of what it is to be indigenous, then we disappear as a people. And so right now we're kind of giving, we like to say we're kind of giving our last battle, because if we don't fight back now, then we won't be able to exist as a people in like maybe 100 years or so. And so our people have had to fight back against these encroachments. And the way they've done that is that, well, there has been an organization that was formed back then, which was the Arauco Mayeco Coordinator, basically a direct action group that established sovereignty for all indigenous peoples, for themselves specifically, of the Mapuche Nation, and to establish like autonomy within the region for, you know, with the control of our land, control of our resources, and control of our own cosmology. And so they have been heavily criminalized because of the fact that they have been able to organize their communities and actually fight back in terms of direct action. So like I was saying earlier, the burning of logging trucks, for example, the burning of certain pieces of estate. Never has there been ever any casualties on behalf of our people towards any, like, no one within like the corporate structure or even the military or even the police have had any casualties on behalf of our people in this direct action struggle. But with our people, though, in standing up for the land, in taking back the land, there have been at least 3 casualties within the last decade that have taken the lives of young Mapuche people, such as that of, first of all, Alex Limón Saavedra. The anniversary of his death actually passed by very recently on November 7th, and he was shot with a rubber bullet by a police officer to the head, and the impact actually punctured into his brain, and therefore he died later in hospital, and this was in 2001, and he was only 17 years old. And later on in 2008, Matias Catrileo Quesada, who was 24 years old, was actually shot in the back with live ammunition by a Chilean police officer while peacefully reclaiming land with several other people as well within the lands of what we now know that they are supposedly part of logging, a huge entrepreneur in the region. His name was Luxinger. Eduardo Luxinger, who's a major shareholder in many of these corporations. And so Matias Cachiro died of his wounds, and he was only 24 years old, being shot in the back by live ammunition. It was really, really, really painful when we heard about this. This was on January 3rd, 2008. And on August 9th, 2009, another Mapuche man was also shot in the back. His name was Jaime Mendoza Coyillo. He was also 24 years old, and he also died of his wounds. And that was also part of a land reclamation site as well. So we can see that the state has actually taken on a very offensive role against our people in terms of any self-determination whatsoever. So our people have had to fight back in that regard. And further, like, you know, direct actions have been taken, as well as the state has also taken the step to incarcerate more of our indigenous peoples. And right now, we actually just came out of a huge trial where one of the four of our Mapuche brothers were sentenced to 10 and 14 years in prison for the supposed attack on, like, a federal prosecutor in the region, because he led a raid on the community and people fought back. And because of this, people ended up with 10 and 14 years in prison. Some of the names that I can recall at this moment are like Hector Jaitul, Jonathan Huigan, Jose Weneche, and Ramon Ganquileo. Those are the four that actually managed to get the highest sentences. So they are facing between 8 and 14 years in prison. That actually happened as of September, so this is a fairly recent happening, actually. And currently now, people are still organizing in their communities. There was just a week ago, there was a huge gathering of entrepreneurs of all logging companies within, like, South America that had their conference within one of the small towns within Wanamapu, and people went to go and protest, obviously, because of the damage they have done to the communities and to the land itself. So that resistance is ongoing, and our people continue to fight every single day for their sovereignty. And so we try and see what we can do to stand by them in that way.
Mm-hmm. You shared the story of Matias Cachiro. What happened during the trial? It was on November the 2nd, the trial against Matias Cachiro.
Basically, Matias Cachileo's death was in 2008 by a Chilean police officer, and what was being dealt with then was the murderer of Matias Cachileo. He was being tried in martial court, actually, earlier on. The interesting thing about the Chilean law is that a lot of it is martial law. That, for example, if a civilian is killed by a police officer, for example, that can't actually be tried in normal court. That has to be tried within martial military law, which is an absurdity across the world. And if we look at the other proceedings with other Mapuche brothers and sisters, we can see that there's like a double jeopardy, because they have been tried both by military law and by the regular courts. So it's really, really arbitrary in that aspect. But anyway, and the point with Matias's murderer, the process has been ongoing for the past couple of years. And I believe the final court session was held at the beginning of November. And we are still waiting to hear about the final sentence that the police officer will get. And that's something that we haven't heard of yet. That's still pending information. But it's likely to happen within the next month or so. And so we're just waiting to hear on further information about that. But considering the way in which they have dealt with murderers of our people, we are probably expecting him to probably go free, because we have learned information about the fact that he has actually been promoted within the Chilean police establishment within another town in southern Chile, far away from where the incident happened with Matias. But he's still working as a police officer, in a higher rank, actually. And so if it's like the SIU in Toronto, you don't really expect there to be justice if the police itself is doing the investigation for you, especially if it's so stagnant to be within martial and military law. the likeliness of that happening is extremely minimal. So we're not actually expecting a good sentence from that. And therefore, we have to say that justice in that way has to be, you know, taken by the community in that way. And we have to be able to exert our own autonomy in that way. That's the only way that we can actually live up to Matias's murder and be able to have justice for him and all the other martyrs that we've had in this movement, to just continue that struggle on and to continue fighting for our sovereignty and our autonomy.
I just wanted to say that Matias Catrileo, his murderer was Officer Walter Ramirez. How do Western states, including, well, specifically Canada, how is Canada morally, financially supporting the repression that's going on Mapuche territory in Chile?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because everything is interrelated in that way. There are no direct corporate interests specifically with Canadian companies within Mapuche territory. However, the Canadian state is extremely well guided with the Chilean government. They are extremely close, ideologically speaking as well. Both governments, like the Harper government and the Piñera government right now, are center right-wing governments that deal very closely with everything that has to do with economics and economic trade, just generally, so, and more so actually in terms of security. Because actually, one of the ways in which Canada has actually provided a fair amount of support towards this is actually towards the criminalization of Indigenous peoples. One of the ways that they did this, actually, in the case that I mentioned beforehand, the four people that were tried for allegedly attacking a federal prosecutor, that federal prosecutor is actually trained in North America by the FBI, by the NSA, and by CSIS. And we've come to know this information through our own people, by them denouncing the situation, and the fact that this federal prosecutor is actually not an innocent bystander. He's actually very implicit in the ongoing genocide of our peoples.
Can you mention what CSIS stands for?
CSIS stands for the Canadian Security Intelligence Services. Essentially like a CIA agency here in Canada. So when we see these kinds of things happen in terms of the interrelations of security that have happened between these two states, we can actually see the patterns of genocide replicate themselves even here locally. So if we have a government that has the power and willingness to share that intelligence and to share their so-called knowledge to form like counterterrorism against people who are legitimately resisting and legitimately fighting back for their lands, what are they doing here? We have a huge example of what's been happening over the last couple of years in regards to the criminalization of Indigenous resistance and the criminalization of dissenters generally. And so this is one of the ways in which the Canadian government has been absolutely complicit within the criminalization of our own peoples. So, and we can see it even furthermore in the fact that the approach that they take towards Indigenous peoples here is also reflected, because the ongoing genocide of Indigenous peoples here is still very present. And so in that way as well, not just with our own brothers and sisters in Wanmapu, but also on the lands here in Turtle Island, they're completely complicit in the ongoing genocide of Indigenous peoples all over.
Mm-hmm. So the Women's Coordinating Committee for Free Wanmapu, what projects are you currently working on?
There's a few things. One thing that we've done for the last few years has been initializing a boycott towards all Chilean fruit and wines, basically because any free trade agreement that was reached between Canada and Chile several years ago enables the free trade of various products. And we know that the people that can actually afford to sell the products on an international market are those that have had the ability to, you know, have control over a large part of Chile's resources and territories, including Mapuche territories. And so even though the extraction of natural resources, such as logging, for example, is in the industrial sector, people can still do their part, because if they boycott Chilean fruit and wine, these people are also the owners of Chile, and each of them are connected in their investments and in their connections as an elite group that pretty much owns pretty much every radio station and every other company throughout the country. And so if you attack one product that people can actually purchase in a store, that will actually filter through and actually affect trade within other areas of the Chilean economy, which include mining and include industrial products such as logging. So that's one of the campaigns that we have been working on, which is the boycott of Chilean fruit and wine until all the repression has ceased within Mapuche territory. And people have widely been acting on this boycott, and we're really thankful towards like the grassroots actions that have been taking place specifically in Toronto, for example, and maybe all over Southern Ontario as well, that have taken this message across, and we're thankful for that. The other thing that we are working on right now, specifically a newer project, is that we're trying to create more awareness about the uranium mining in Jiujiu, which is a lake located in the middle of Mapuche territory within the 10th region of so-called Chile. The community called Juana Miahual, who is a community that has had the history of resisting the ongoing encroachment. The community itself was born out of a direct action in taking back the land, and have actually managed to stay on that land for the last 10 years. So the community itself is based on a portion of a logging resort that was actually taken from the company and actually established as a community. And so they physically and territorially control that area and been able to establish themselves for the last 10 years. However, there's ongoing, you know, danger to that entire area, not just by the logging companies themselves, but also now with new agreements with mining, and specifically uranium mining in the area, which, as we all know, all mining is bad. We know gold mining is bad, coal mining is bad, but uranium mining is probably the worst out of all of them in terms of pollutants, right? So the community has been gathering support in order to be able to fend back against those that have secretly tried to open the mine or trying to open an open pit mine within the Yo-Yo Lake region. And so that's what we're trying to do now, is create more awareness about the stopping the uranium mine that's going up in Jiujiu at this time, and our people, I'm pretty sure, will be able to fend them off with the support that they will get from the international community, which is what we are here to do, and try and to tell our brothers and sisters, our indigenous brothers and sisters here in the north, as well as our beloved allies as well, to stand by in terms of information and what else they can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how can us Canadians, how can we work to do our part to be most helpful to your campaigns?
Well, basically, you can denounce it itself as well, but also keep up with the updates that we have. We have a blog that we have established. It's wcctoronto.wordpress.com. So if you guys want to go onto that website, it's a little blog that we have to keep up with the information that we have. We do translate the information from our territories to English so that people can understand what's going on. We are currently in the process of updating the site as well in terms of the newer information, and that will be coming up shortly. So people can be tempted for that. And as well, continue that ongoing boycott of Chilean fruit and wine, because the more we hurt that economy, the more our people will be able to fight back against those corporations that are going on with the encroachment of our lands. And so that's all I really have to say in that way, and just be very vigilant and come out to support us if we call out for demos and stuff at the Chilean Council, which is always very needed, because that's something that we have to stand in solidarity together. And if there's something that we've been able to see in the last little while, is that solidarity is something that can come from these communities, from communities around Toronto, especially around Toronto as well. Here in Guelph, we've seen a lot of support from folks here, and we're really grateful for that. And we want to be able to continue those links and those connections so that we can continue further. So we're always thankful.
Thank you so much, Yaroslava, for talking to me.
Yeah, no problem. It's our pleasure to be here.
I was talking to Yaroslava of the Women's Coordinating Committee for Free Wild Mapu in Toronto, which is a Mapuche Indigenous organization.